I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show, the run from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and we have a full crew here to talk about the season 5 finale. I have Mr. Lance Laster.
What up, what up?
You're very familiar with Lance from the podcast, and we have a couple of special guests from the band Spells and Curses. We have The Rave and Supa Bass. What's up, guys?
Hello.
How you doing?
For the listeners at home, which one of you is The Rave?
I am The Rave. I sing and play guitar in Spells and Curses. And Supa Bass is not the drummer of the band. He actually plays the bass.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Supa Bass representing with a Supa Bass shirt.
I love the bass clef on there. So I play trombone, so I appreciate the low bass clef. Bass clef brothers, I like it.
Yeah, man, definitely, I love it. Nothing wrong with a shameless plug, right?
You so you guys, big fans of Smallville here?
Huge fans.
Yeah, I've seen every single episode, start to finish. Followed it all throughout. Basically, growing up from the time I was 11 to the time I was in college.
Yeah, I remember watching it when I was in middle school, right when it came out, because I was really huge into the Superman animated series. As well as the Batman animated series, and they ran like a commercial that they were going to run a make like a live action TV show. When I saw that, I'm like, let's check it out. Watch that. I haven't been as dedicated of a fan during the original run, I must admit, because it did run for 10 seasons. So there were some seasons I missed, but I watched a good chunk of it. And then one or 2 years ago, I was like, let me just watch every episode. And I did. And it's probably my favorite TV show.
Nice, yeah.
It was at a very formative time when you're growing up, and you know, you kind of look for role models wherever. And growing up, I didn't realize this until I watched it again a second time. But I never realized like how much the character of Clark Kent kind of like shaped me as a person in terms of like how I would approach certain situations in terms of like being, you know, doing the right thing and sort of trying to be the best version of you and helping people out and sort of going that extra mile for other people, for others, when you can. I didn't really realize or appreciate just how much of an influential character Clark Kent from Smallville was on me until, again, I watched it. And that's kind of been how I, not to say I'm Clark Kent, but it's kind of been how I've been like approaching like the release of music. When I release music and people hit me up either on Instagram or just email us, and they say, you know, it got me through a tough time. It really got me through something dark, you know, all respect to them. That makes me feel like I'm doing something good. And then, you know, just following up with them, checking in on the people who reached out. So it's kind of like a feedback loop of just spreading positivity and encouragement in a way that I think somehow subconsciously was inspired by Clark Kent. Because everybody loves Clark Kent.
Oh, man, I get it, man. I'm on the show every week talking about, I was the same age as Clark and blah, 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 blah. So I feel, you know, that's great. That's a great sentiment.
He's
to
been
have
saying it. That for a long time, trust me.
But, you know, I mean, well, I don't know if you guys knew, but I'm the same age as Clark Kent. As when Smallville was on the show. No, for real, though. I think all these things have their place, right? But I think when you have a good, like, a moral compass of a role model, right, that you're inspired to go be and emulate that thing out in the world. So
that's exactly you summed it up very well in better terms than I could. It's the moral compass of the character that we have a lot of like anti-heroes and badass guys like Batman, Wolverine. That's cool. They all have a place. I mean, I love Spawn. You know, it's nothing cooler than being a demon Spawn from hell that can kill people and have all these crazy powers. But there is something to be said, something that's super inspiring about somebody who has every like incredible superpower in the world, and yet their true superpower is their ability to always try to do the right thing no matter what corruption or obstacle they face. That's in my opinion the superpower of Superman, the true like inspirational message that I think everybody, if they wanted to, can take from Superman. That's why he's my favorite character.
Yeah. That's great, Rafe. Follow that up, Super Bass. What do you got?
I was about to say, man, I probably should have went first, man. That was a little profound. but I will say this. Everyone loves Smallville, or everyone who's watched Smallville definitely loves the theme song. I forget the name. I forget the name of the band that wrote it.
Remy Zero.
Remy Zero.
Yeah, Remy Zero. Go. Yep,
there it is.
Remy Zero.
There it is.
So before I joined Spells and Curses, I was playing around New York City in a whole bunch of different types of bands, a hip-hop band, a Latin band, you know, stuff like that, but never this type of band that can facilitate playing like a cover song, like theme song to Smallville. So when I finally got with Spells and Curses, I'm like, yo, these guys are cool. I'm like, the instrumentation is cool, the style of music that we play is cool, and then once I found out that Rave here was a Smallville fan, I'm like, yo, word, you know the theme song? Because I just learned it like 2 seconds ago on bass. And I've been dying to play it, man. So one day we jammed on it, and I was like, yo, I didn't know you liked the show so much. So I don't necessarily say it had an influence on the band, but I will say it definitely strengthened the relationship between myself and the Rave, because if we definitely now have something else to talk about. Oh, remember that episode of Smallville? Oh, remember this is Smallville? That was so cool. Oh, you know Pete back in season one? Like, you know.
That is 100% true. I remember the day I found he was a Smallville fan. I was like, all right, this guy is my man. The moment I knew he was my brother for life is when we both agreed on what the best season of the show was. His favorite season is my favorite season, and that's when I knew, like, I love this guy.
What season is that?
Well, now we have to know.
Yeah.
Season 9, baby.
Oh, yes! Right. Well done.
I wasn't sure about you guys, but you could stay.
Season 9, because it's a very decisive, divisive thing amongst a lot of Smallville fans. A lot of people tend to prefer the earlier stuff, but season 9, man, I mean.
I love season 9. I mean, it's hard for me to say definitively now what my favorite one is until I'm done with the podcast, right? But yep. that is a great season. Like I say, it's in my top 3 or 4 seasons for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think season 9 being as good as it is justified the show running as long as it did, you know,
100%.
Like it goes like 6 and 7. You're like, I don't know, maybe they should have cut it off around 5, but they bounce back. You know, season 10 is solid, right? Like it has a handful of excellent episodes and then some duds in there. So it's more hit or miss. Right. Yeah. But as a whole, season 9 is one of the best seasons of the show. Cause there's an arc and I love season 9. So
I will say that, my personal opinion, the best actor from the show left in season 7 in Michael Rosenbaum. And you would think that the show there would like go downhill. But in fact, again, my personal opinion, I feel like the show actually elevated in a sense, just cause the identity is there, but once you hit season 8 and beyond, there was a sense of like a big bad for the whole season. Like you knew who the villain was, and you knew that there was going to be like a backstory to that villain. Seasons prior to 8, you didn't necessarily have that. You were kind of like going with the motions, kind of like a villain of the week here, villain of the week there, or maybe a sprinkle of a Justice League character here or something like that. But there was never that feel that, oh, okay, I know who's going to be the villain, or how are they going to introduce him? How are they going to tell his story, you know?
That's a good point, yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, like, there's a lot of things that happened in season 9 that were, like, incredible, like the development of Lois and Clark as a couple.
Oh, yeah, big time.
They had Zod, Kalen Blue, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he was fantastic.
Their second attempt at Zod, we'll see their first one in this episode.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, I love Kalen. I don't think there's been a bad Zod. I've loved every Zod, every iteration of Zod. I think they always nail that character, whenever he cast him. Kalen Blue was great. He was like young Terrence Stamp. I guess that's what they told him to do, and he knocked it out of the park for sure.
Yeah.
So you guys have played a cover of Save Me?
We practiced it. I mean, like in rehearsal, we didn't perform it, but it was,
Hit me up next time you guys have that on recording. And I'll
we will. Most definitely. Yeah, that's on the to-do list.
So we're here talking about the season 5 finale, Vessel. At the time, right, of the show, talking about favorite seasons, I said season 5 is my favorite season. You know, just watch them in order. Because really? I think season 5 had given us everything we were waiting for. Lex and Clark's, you know, friendship, and Lana and Clark getting together, and then breaking up, right? And then, you know, Daily Planet, Metropolis. So Jonathan Kent's death, which is like this inevitable thing in a lot of Superman interpretations. So season 5, you know, it was a lot leading up to this finale. And it's one of those two-part finales again. But I think, you know, we'll talk about it when we rate everything at the end. But I always have very fond memories of this episode and rank it among one of my favorites. So, especially for that Clark-Chloe kiss, am I right?
That was a bit weird, but yeah.
That was a bit, yeah, I mean, it was very out of place.
Season 5 wasn't my jam. I mean, there were some great moments, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't one of my favorites.
Yeah, for me, like I'd say when I do go back and rewatch the series, because that was another thing about the show. Like once it ended, it was so hard to find reruns. This is before streaming services were really popular, or even I think out. But now when I go back to watch reruns, it's usually starting from like maybe season 7, maybe something in season 6, but not so much the earlier ones. Kind of like what Arnold says, like season 5, I think I would need to rewatch it as a whole to like get the full grasp of it. I definitely know after rewatching the season finale, everything makes sense. Like, oh, okay, that happened there, that happens there, then that leads into season 6. But it's just like I got to rewatch the whole thing to get the full grasp of the season, you know?
Yeah, and I think especially after season 4, which I'm not really the biggest fan of, I really enjoyed season 5. I feel like it was like, okay, we're back on track here.
Mm-hmm. I actually liked season 4 and the lightheartedness of it. It was like the last season where they were teenagers in high school and there was fun stuff happening before the reality.
Senior year, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I in retrospect, I did like it more. I think it's just because I had my own stuff going on my senior year of high school and I was, gotcha. Gotcha. I was like, this is not my life right now. But hey, yeah, lots of good pregame there. Let's go ahead and get into it. Vessel.
Hello, my son.
I had no other choice but to come here.
I know you are still angered by the loss of Jonathan Kent.
He was my father.
I am your father. Pain is part of life, Kal-El, but you cannot let it blind you.
Fine has returned. To release Zod, what am I supposed to do?
Fine is merely an extension of the craft that can regenerate in any form.
If Fine is part of this ship, then who is controlling it?
It's not just a ship. It's the brain interactive construct. An advanced technology that will stop at nothing until its master, Zod, has been released.
No, there's got to be some way to stop him.
There is one way. Zod was imprisoned in the Phantom Zone for crimes that led to the destruction of our planet.
Zod killed you.
And your mother. And our entire race. Just as he will do on Earth.
I won't let that happen!
Zod's physical body was destroyed to prevent him from escaping the Phantom Zone. He can be freed if he finds a body. A vessel to inhabit. You must find the human vessel and destroy it. No matter who it may be.
Vessel is the 22nd episode of Smallville's 5th season. It aired on May 11th, 2006. Was written by Kelly Saunders and Brian Peterson and directed by James Marshall. So it is here. Dark Thursday has arrived here in Smallville. There are a couple of deleted scenes in this episode. Actually, you can see on the DVDs. We'll mention those as we go. But the opening scene is, I guess it's like kind of an Independence Day kind of thing. We start out like
seems that
a
way.
Big shadow coming across Smallville. I guess the ship, the Brainiac, came and got a lot bigger. This kind of reminded me of the season 4 finale when Clark's having the dream about, like, you know, a spaceship coming, but it was just instead of the night, it's in the day.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing here is, like, you know, well, first of all, there's no previously on at the beginning of this. It's like, didn't we have a cliffhanger last week?
Well, yeah, actually, last week said to be continued, and usually it's like previously on Smallville. Yeah, so if you, well, I think maybe they just didn't have time, right? Because they already deleted 2 scenes. I don't know what else you would have taken out. There's already stuff in here that doesn't make sense.
Yes.
I don't know how much else you could have taken out. But it's the whole like here comes an alien spaceship, and we see the Kent farm has some
horses.
I guess they've always had horses, right? But we like never see them.
Yeah.
And like now Clark's like with the horses and stuff. I'm like, what is this, the same barn? They have more than one barn. I don't know. But, anyway.
Well, hey, well, I mean, the animals notice all the danger first. So true to life.
So then we go to Lex and Lana taking a nap on the couch.
Yeah.
I don't think this is like the morning after the last episode, Smallville, as everybody knows who listens to this podcast. What day is it? What time is it? Nobody knows. with, you know, this spaceship coming and this disturbance in Smallville, Lex gets a crazy headache and drives out into the middle of this field, right?
Yeah, kind of odd. Just like, it's like a telepathic calling. Like, I try to equate that to like the cartoon or like the animated series. And it's like, is that Superman's version of hearing like a high-pitched noise and going to like that sound to see what the issue is? Like, what drove him necessarily to that field? Or why couldn't it just happen in his mansion? I guess.
Right. Could the ship just fly over there?
And yeah. Take him right there. Him on the couch.
Zoom him up. I guess they had a good helicopter budget for stuff this week, because there's a car chase and they're in the field. And there's some great shots of here where Lana's chasing Lex and. Everybody calling Lex on the phone. People, listen, don't use your phone while you drive. All right, it's a law
this
most
was,
places.
This was like
a headset.
Early 2000s, man. That wasn't the vibe back then.
There's every character in the show uses their phone and drives. And you know how many car accidents we have on this show? Lex and Clark are friends.
True, because of a car accident,
Lex.
Yeah.
Just got a phone call, all right, and the pilot, as they mentioned in this episode, right on the bridge. And it's funny to see that this is before hands free. Well, you know, Lex Luthor should have hands free.
He can afford
anyway.
It.
He can invent it. Yeah,
yeah, that too. Smart enough.
You know, something else that I noticed here is, you know, Lana's chasing Lex, and now that Lana is Lex's girlfriend, she wears black all the time because she's evil now. Ooh. Apparently, like that's, you know, dark colors, and I guess she pulled a Selena Kyle from Batman Returns, threw away all her pink stuff, just spray paint everything black. You know, it's just funny to see.
Now it's like reds and blacks in this episode.
Some red, because so red is the color of death.
So she's full Sith.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, no, I thought the same thing. I'm like, okay, this is cool, right? But like, why? I'm sure Brainiac could just fly the ship up to the Luthor Mansion, but I guess if he did that, we couldn't get the cool crop circle of the big Z for Zod out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is all about.
I think that was the first time we saw that in the series, right? Like the crop circle, not on like the barn, but like on actual field.
Yeah, because it had in the season 3 finale was like, it was burning, so it wasn't like a crop circle.
Right.
And then you're right, Clark had burned it in various places, but this is like your classic, because you know, everybody knows, if anybody knows anything about UFO mythology in like the real world, right, crop circles are a thing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see them, like, we're here in Smallville, we have spaceships. It's a logical thing to have crop circles.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is actually a really well directed scene too. I really like the shots of Lex when it's like just his face and it's like the camera's locked on him and it's got the whole like I'm going crazy shot where he's in focus but everything else is blurring. So a lot of good. James Marshall is one of the best directors on the show, and I think he did a great job building tension and like a franticness here, you know, because Lana runs up to him and he's like, "Stay away!" Although I had to laugh that Brainiac shows up, you know, Fine shows up, and he's wearing a suit. Like, why are you wearing a suit? What do you guys think of that?
Coming from being a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan and Angel fan, I'm just glad that the character was James Marsters. I just love the character, or love the actor, rather. And just seeing him as Brainiac, I was like, oh, this is interesting. First, I'm like, oh, wow, you're not British. Okay, so that's thing one.
Wait, he's not?
Two, yeah, no, he put on the accent. Yeah.
Oh, good for him. Good.
Yeah,
good
right? So, yeah, he just played the character really well. And I'm just like, oh, this is cool. But, yeah, the suit was a little weird. I was hoping, you know, if like, it was a little face paint or something that. That's the thing. He never went like full Brainiac
full
in the
Brainiac.
Show. No, he always had like the thing come out of his fingers, but he never like visualized Brainiac.
Yeah.
Well, remember, this is not, you know, 2020 where you can have like green skin and the three dots and stuff.
Right?
You couldn't have this back then.
This is true.
Yeah, it's you see modern interpretations of Brainiac. Like, I don't. Did you guys watch Krypton?
I've seen clips, and it looked cool. I've seen clips of Brainiac on the show.
I was highly skeptical of that show. I was like, what is this? Hmm. Right? It's Krypton before Superman's dad was born. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Excellent show. Lasted two seasons. Sci-Fi Channel canceled it. Very unfortunate. I would have loved to see it continue. amazing Brainiac on that show.
Really?
Like that's the way Brainiac should look like in a movie.
Wow.
Like, well, yeah, I mean, that's perfect. But this is a different time, right? Yeah. This is 2006, as we said. And that's the thing, like this episode, I remember, you know, it was like at the time, it was like, this is the most epic thing I've ever seen on television. Mm. You look back at it today, you're like, oh, it's kind of quaint. But remember, context is everything, people. So, yeah. You know, we live in a world now with a Christ on Infinite Earth. So it's not quite the world-changing thing.
I've got to say, though, like, in my opinion, when I rewatched the series, like, the special effects still hold up. I mean, they're not obviously not world class, but I never was taken out of the moment by how bad it looked or how fake it looked or anything like that. For me, anyway. I mean, I'm not like a stickler for special effects, but even back then, I mean, I'm trying to think of like one specific example. Like even in previous seasons, I think season 3 where
the mace to the face.
Well, like
when Clark and like in the opening credits, and Clark is like, "Oh,
oh, right, that's a perfect example, actually, because like that was pretty cool. I mean, I've never seen a mace smash against anybody's face and break, but
how's it supposed to look?
Yeah, I know, right? We don't know.
It looked convincing enough for me, and I mean, like it was. I think another cool thing about Smallville is because that makes like their special effects work is that all the scenes with the special effect or any special effect is rooted in some kind of emotional storytelling. So you're not necessarily, it's not like a vapid action scene where people are doing like a kung fu kind of battle. It's rooted in some kind of conflict between two characters that are trying to resolve something. And there's like an emotional core at the undercurrent of what they're doing. And so when you see the special effect, you're like, oh, it's going there now. Not like, oh, look at that. It's a CGI kind of flame thing. So, I mean, I liked it.
I agree. I feel like, off the top of my head right now, I can only think of one scene from Smallville where I'm like, oh, that looks kind of cheesy. And that's honestly, actually, I can think of two now. One was the very
keep
last
thinking,
scene.
Keep thinking, they're going to keep coming up. So. Right?
One was the very last scene of the series when you actually finally see Clark flying. And sitting there in a suit. I'm like, what? It's definitely not him because Tom Welling never wore the suit.
Right. Imaging.
The other one, which is actually in this episode, is actually the last scene with Lex and Lionel. I don't want to get too far ahead, actually, but when Lex and Lionel are on the roof and they're clearly in front of a green screen, you know, it's like, and it's like, okay, that looks kind of, you could tell that's a green screen.
You make some good points there, everybody, because I think Smallville still is the superior show to all these shows we're seeing today. Because, in my opinion, I'm biased.
I agree.
It's a Smallville podcast, my favorite show. But everything has an emotional core to it, a relatable core. Like, every episode isn't like a message, per se, right? But these are situations, these are relationships, these are life lessons, mm-hmm. these are things you can take with you. Not every episode, right? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the majority of it, right, there's an emotional human element core to it, right, that grounds it, right? When a lot of the stuff today is, like, just interchangeable, generic superhero action, I think.
For the most part, yes.
So, and there are exceptions. There are exceptions, but I feel like Smallville owns that competition. So, but yeah, no, speaking of special effects, right? I guess I started that. I think all the special effects here are great. Like when the field is blowing up, right? I mean, I'm right in front of Lex. I'm like, man, this is the season finale.
Mm. They have the budget for it.
Save their budget appropriately, yeah. Right? Smart. And yeah, like we said, he gets sucked up to the spaceship.
Yep. And, we have a real like live like alien abduction thing on this show, beam. which was kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Blue beam to the sky.
Blue beam to the sky.
Yeah, that's what we're all about. So, and then of course it leaves the Zod crop circle, as we said, and we get the opening credits. By the way, I don't know how Lana saw what it said. Apparently, like based on Lana's description, it sounds like it's Zod. Like, you can't see that when you're on the ground. But anyway,
hey, don't discount Lana's skills.
By the way, did she have a new Jeep Liberty? By
it
the
seems
way?
That way.
It's like a different, because I thought hers was maroon and now it's red.
But well, it has to match. She has to coordinate.
But anyway,
hey, she's dating a billionaire, you know. So,
so we cut back to the episode, and it's the Kent farm. Now, I think watching that, there's two deleted scenes here. Mm-hmm. Okay, and both of them could happen at any time at this point. So we'll just go ahead and talk about them.
Okay,
one of them is it's Lois trying to book her and Martha's airline tickets, and she can't do it. something's wrong with the laptop.
And the internet is coming out.
She refers to the laptop as a Brainiac.
She does. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad they deleted that. Because it's like, you guys get it? Brainiac is in this episode. I think it's season 7. Chloe finally calls him Brainiac for the first time. Yeah. Because it's the early 2000s, guys. We can't use this Chris Nolan rules. We can't use names, superheroes, or something to be ashamed of. Right.
They did have Jor-El refer to him as the Brain Interactive.
The Brain Interactive Construct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, I liked that. That was clever. Yeah. So that's their scene there. And it's like Martha and Lois, and
they're bonding-ish. Yeah.
And she thinks she's going to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And later on, she probably should have been fired.
Yeah,
but
I definitely would have fired her later. We'll talk about that. But, you know, but they have a bonding moment. And Martha's like, you know, it's okay, Lois. You remind me a lot of someone else. And I'm like, I thought she was going to say, you remind me of me. I was like, okay, whatever. That's the point of that scene. I think it took place in the teaser, like maybe in between Clark on the farm and Lex getting the message in his head, because I don't know where else it would have gone. Mm-hmm. Because when we come back to the episode after the opening credits here, Lois is on the phone with, you know, airline people. Yeah. And she's like, I'm going to talk to your supervisor.
Yeah.
I want to talk to your supervisor.
She's in full Karen mode.
Wow.
So that tells me that scene already took place.
Yeah.
But anyway, Lionel comes over, and Lionel, the black on black, he looks pretty good in it.
Yeah, right? Lionel's great. Lionel's doing, in his full Mac Daddy bro.
Yeah, exactly.
I see you,
doing.
Lionel. I see you.
His hair is on fleek.
You know what he was doing? When Martha opens the door, well, first of all, who goes to someone's house, knocks on their door, and then turns their back? Like, I've never seen that. Because when she opens the door, he just turns around and like,
bro.
Oh, hi. Like, what?
The whole Lionel's a good guy thing just never, like, I couldn't get with it. I like, as Clark, I don't know how he would ever trust him. Like, the one scene that, like, flipped my lid was the Thanksgiving scene where Clark's just looking at everybody. He's like, I love these guys. And then you see Lionel in, like, this fuzzy filter. He's like, that guy tried to kill me a few times, but I love him. He gave birth to, like,
I think Lionel tried to kill everyone in that.
He's the guy who's the father of my mortal enemy, and I love this guy. And Lionel's, like, apparently his surrogate dad after his dad died. It was that. So ever since then, I just couldn't. I never really liked Lionel as a good guy.
They got over that real quick, I will say. I think that it came to a head in the last episode in Oracle, but I'm like, I feel like you guys should have, like, had to hash more stuff out at this point.
Yeah.
Clark knows now that Lionel kind of pushed his dad to have his heart attack. So, I don't know. I guess Clark blames himself more than anybody else.
Yeah, probably of course.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that Lionel, I mean, he does, by conventional sense, he does overstay his welcome, but I think this is the only character and actor that I'm like, that's fine. Because I just love John Glover. He's so good at everything. I'm like, because you look at other shows, like, you look at the Heroes. I bring that up all the time. Siler, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I love Zachary Quinto as Siler, but he stayed on way too long, and they just ruined the character. All this back and forth, good and bad. Mm-hmm. They kept it pretty vague with Lionel, but no, I see what you mean. Especially when there's a lot of father-son moments in this episode between Lionel and Clark.
Yeah.
It felt inappropriate. And I feel like Clark should have felt it was inappropriate, too. But speaking of wardrobe here, you know, you mentioned season 9. Martha's in her full Red Queen outfit here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
It's like, whoa.
Crazy foreshadowing right there.
She just pulled that out of the closet and put on that scarf, and then she's the Red Queen a few years later. But she's because they're going to go to some conference or whatever, right?
Educational summit.
Conference, right? But they can't get tickets. So Lionel's like, you should use the Luther Corp jet. And they have a moment of like, I can't keep accepting favors from you. And they're like way too close. He has clearly invaded her personal space.
Yep.
And, like, are you guys going to kiss or something? Like, there's so, like, I don't know. Like, the show, like, I know this is one of your favorite subplots.
Because it's hilarious.
Like, I feel like the show, it does such a good job because you know Martha and Lionel is wrong, but you kind of like it, but you kind of don't want it to happen. And it's a hard balance. And I feel like the show plays it pretty well.
I agree. And that's why I like it so much. And especially, and that plus, like, Lionel's, like, been so obvious about it from the jump. It's so funny to me.
No chill on that guy, for sure.
Yeah.
No. So he's going to give her the Luther Corp jet, which will come into play later in the episode. But from here, we go to the Daily Planet, right?
Yeah. Lana shows up and is talking to Chloe about how Lex got taken.
Taken.
Yeah, right.
They say taken so many times. They could have called this episode Taken.
They could have.
Taken.
And she's like, they took him. And it's like, and it like, it on one hand, like, it sounds super ridiculous. She's like, who are you talking about? What are you talking about? But then, like, you know, she came to the right person. She's talking to Chloe about, like, an alien abduction. Of course, like, Chloe, you know, the founder and the curator of the Wall of Weird, like, this is right up her alley. She's like, she knows exactly what to do, how to handle it, how to talk to somebody about it. Like, it's she's the perfect person to come to. And also, like, you know, outside of Lex, you know, Lana's only friend. So it makes
sense. At this point. She's going to call Aunt Nell about Lex being abducted by aliens. Yeah. That's right. Of course, Chloe pulls her into that side room now that's like always there for mm-hmm. her and Clark to have all these private conversations.
That's correct.
And I guess, you know, I guess Chloe just tells Lana to stay there.
I guess.
Hang around. Because we find out later that Lana is still hanging around the Daily Planet when Clark comes back to tell Chloe that he has to kill Lex for
purposes. Right.
But then from there, Chloe goes to talk to Clark
immediately about it.
At the Kent Barn. Again, a 3-hour drive. She's like, stay here, Lana. I'll be back in 6 hours. I'm not going anywhere. Because cell phones, a simple phone call would have sufficed.
Yeah, I forget about that. Like, I really do. Like, I forget how the distance between Smallville and Metropolis. And, like, because Clark just runs it, like, you know, no problem. Yeah. But everyone else, you forget that it's like a 3-hour drive, right? From the city to out the city. And like, they make it seem like it's nothing, which is crazy.
I'm pretty sure they forget about it, too.
Yep.
But especially episodes like this where people go back and forth and back and forth. Through this conversation with Lana, you know, Chloe has gotten like, okay, like, fine, is involved, and he took Lex, and what's going to happen? So she goes to tell Clark this. By the way, we have a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket, because Clark is wearing his pseudo-Superman costume. We also have they said Vessel yet?
No.
Have they said, because they say it about 10 times.
They say it 5 times.
Okay, you haven't counted.
I counted it. They say Vessel 5 times in this episode.
That's gotta be a record. Most times they've said the episode title. Chloe goes to tell Clark about this, and eventually Clark's like, okay, I better go talk to Jor-El. I've been putting it off. Whenever I talk to him, bad stuff happens, but maybe he's just trying to protect me. Maybe he's just trying to protect all of us. Right? Yep. It's like, okay, Clark.
And they closed really hard on his face when they said that in this episode.
Well, the thing about, what do you guys think about Clark's relationship with Jor-El on this show?
Oh, man. Talk about abusive and toxic. I'll let you start, Superbase. I mean, there's a lot to say.
With this relationship, yeah, it's just because it's like, you don't know necessarily what Jor-El wants. He's never comes out. Like, you know, because you know what the end result is. He becomes Superman. He becomes the savior of the planet, of the entire universe. But it's like, it starts off in like season 3. He wants him to be like a villain. You will destroy the world. And then like later seasons, he's like, you'll just distance yourself from the humans. And it's like, I don't hear the hero aspect in this at all. All I hear is a bunch of trials and tribulations. And like, if that were my quote unquote father, I'd probably be like, you know what? I have my powers. Screw this. You're not giving me any direct answers. I'm out. I can run really fast. I'm good to go. Goodbye.
You want to know why Clark forgives him though? Also in season 9, he forgives him because Jor-El teaches him how to get with the ladies and not kill them.
How to
control it.
I guess that's a Kryptonian version of the talk.
I guess so.
Yeah, the thing is, right, if Clark actually went and talked to Jor-El on a regular basis, pretty much all the problems of the series would be solved.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I'm not going to talk to him. Like, he could have told you Milton Fine was an evil Kryptonian, way before. Ooh. So, I don't know. Sometimes these contrivances work, sometimes they don't. This is the 110th episode, right? Mm-hmm. The 100th episode is the last time we saw the Fortress. We got to get our money's worth out of that set, so we got to go back. But it's just like, it's been 10 episodes since we've talked to Jor-El. So he decides to go. I don't know if it's stock footage or not. It feels like of Clark dropping the octagonal disc into the cave. I bet it is. I bet if you go look through season 4, early season 5, that's why Clark wears the same thing all the time, so they can get away with this using the same footage. But he goes to the fortress. But you have super speed. Why don't you just run up there, bro? But anyway. He goes in there, he talks to Jor-El, and Jor-El basically tells him, like, the brain interactive construct, as you guys pointed out. I think that's a cool, like let's find a way to use the term brainiac, but, like, not be ridiculous.
That was fine. That was so cool.
The brain interactive construct. Yeah. Of course, Terrence Stamp is back, you know, for those who have been living under a rock, played General Zod in the Superman movies, so that's why it's cool, because he finally gets to talk about Zod. We haven't really heard him talk about Zod before. So.
This is also the first instance of the word vessel being used.
Vessel,
this happens
there we
here.
Go. So we got our plus one for episode titles and episode vessel all the time, right? So they mention that Zod's physical body was destroyed which doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what kind of Kryptonian technology. The Phantom Zone projector had like a switch on it, and they said, scramble your physical body. Because every other person we see in this show, I'm not just talking about the movies or other shows, in this show, they go in the Phantom Zone as a person, they come out as a person. Yep. Nobody turns into a spirit. But to the show's credit, in season 10, they combine the two Zods eventually, and it all makes sense. But in Smallville, The Official Companion, season 5 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold.
Shouts to Craig.
Creator Al Goff had this to say about Zod on the show. Very early on, we had talked about the concept that basically Zod had made Brainiac into his image. So once he came down, he was James Marsters. But we all, including James, sort of decided early on that that wasn't the smartest move. What would you guys think about James Marsters being Zod? I would have been okay with it if he had a goatee.
Initially, when I saw like trailers or commercials of it, I thought that's who he was going to play when he was introduced as the professor, Professor Fine. I thought he was somehow going to be led to that because like he has a good base for a villain. So that's what I was expecting.
I could see it. I was definitely a lot more immature back then, so I don't know if I could have taken him seriously after seeing him play Spike for so many years. I don't know if I could take that check because Zod's such a serious character and Spike clearly wasn't. So it's like, that's I can't do that. It's like seeing a comedian. It's like seeing Will Ferrell in a serious movie. It's like, dude, come on.
So is he more comic relief in Angel and Buffy? Or?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, he started...
Because I've never seen those shows, really.
So. Ah, that's okay. Well, he started in Buffy season 2 as a villain. But like Buffy season 4, he definitely came back as comic relief. Season 5, he had a storyline where instead of like trying to kill a Slayer, he fell in love with a Slayer. So it was a whole, he basically became like an anti-hero. So it was hard to take him seriously as a villain at any point after that.
Well, further on the companion, Al Goff goes on to say, quote, breaking the story and really getting into the mechanics of how his plan was going to work in the third act, we came up with the idea of Brainiac using Lex as a pawn. We really missed his interaction with Lex Luthor, and we wanted James and Michael to have a lot of scenes together and watch Lex get outsmarted. We liked the idea of having Michael Rosenbaum as opposed to some guest star running around. This way, we get to see what Lex was doing and how ultimately he was the victim of his own evil will. So, I get that because, like, if there was a Zod here, what is Lex doing this entire, like... episode. Yeah. Like, what is he doing? And you can erase his memory, so he doesn't remember any of this, and he can fight Clark and get all the Lex and Clark interaction you
want.
That's
true.
And so ultimately, I guess, I don't know, that's just such a cheap thing that Smallville always would do. Like, you're possessed by so-and-so. Right? I mean, even like when Feyora comes later, she possesses Lois, right? It's just like, oh, everybody, right? Everybody gets possessed. Oh, I guess that's another one. I stand corrected. Feyora has no physical body either. So,
two.
Good on you, show.
Yeah,
two of them.
Actually,
I think, two of the hundreds of people.
What was this? At the season 6 finale, you see a whole bunch of phantoms being released from the Phantom Zone. They take over humans.
But most of them are physical, right? You're right. I'm so wrong about this. I'm glad we're talking about this now because little Bow Wow, right? Everybody remembers little Bow Wow got possessed by a phantom. Batista was not a phantom.
Yeah, he was.
He was a Martian Manhunter. Straight up killed him because the little crystal doesn't work on him.
Yeah,
wait, wasn't he? He wasn't a phantom?
There's literally a line where he tells Clark, I'm no phantom. Because he tries to use the little crystal, the S crystal on him, and it doesn't work. But you're right. There is a mix of phantoms, and so I stand corrected. So anyway, but the fact that Zod had no, it was weird at the time. But I think the reason they came up with that was because of like, they're like, well, what do we do?
Yeah.
if a real Zod comes out, that's going to be awkward. And remember in, what was it, Solitude, right? Like there was a portal in the fortress, and he was like coming out, right? You could see like a face. But
that's true.
Bottom line, Clark now realizes that he's gonna have to kill Lex because, from what Jor-El tells him, Zod needs a physical body, a vessel to inhabit.
So he gives him a star blade.
He gives him the star blade. Yeah. So they've kind of combined. If we talk about this, how the technology changes on the show, like before Superman Returns, it was all metallic and geometric shapes, right? And Quachi Caves, but then Superman Returns came out, was coming out. They're like, all right, you have to do crystals because people are going to be confused. So it's so dumb how the WB and other studios think about this stuff. So they're like, all right, we're going to have a fortress just like Christopher Reeve, and we're going to have crystals and all that. But they still have all this other stuff, like this disc hanging around.
Yep.
And So Jor-El, like the crystal panel comes out, and there's this crystalline knife.
It's a crystal hilt with the blade.
Yeah, so it's just
it's a little literal merging of the two different ideas.
So one day I'll have to get a prop of this. I guess. But anyway, so he tells Clark that in order to stop Brainiac and Zod, he has to kill the vessel. So with this information, Clark goes back and tells Chloe, which by the way, I don't know how long this has been or whatever, but Lana, by the way, Lana's still hanging out on the planet.
Yep.
Because Clark has gone to tell Chloe now, like, hey, I talked to Jor-El. And she's like, what, you really going to kill someone? He's like, no, I'm not going to kill him. And they go back. They had the same conversation last week about Lionel, by the way, like the exact same conversation about killing someone again in that little side room inside the Daily Planet. But Clark surmises that that's why, you know, Fine took Lex. Lex is the vessel. And they get to a point in the conversation where we see Lana kind of walk up in the background. We just, like, see her through a crack of a door.
Mm-hmm.
At the perfect time where Clark's like, I have to kill Lex.
Yep.
It's like, of course. Worst timing ever. But anyway. So there's the second deleted scene. It has to happen in this part of the episode because where we get to next, Lex has come back from the spaceship. But at the last shot of the promo of Oracle has this like person like a blue bag, like, ah, you know. And what that is, that's a deleted scene from Vessel. That's Lex on the spaceship. And it's ridiculous.
It's hilarious.
I can totally see why they cut this. I can only imagine what Michael Rosenbaum was like filming this, knowing how he is. But it's like a guy in like, you know, like a blue trash bag just sticking his arms out, trying to get out of it. And then Brainiac tells him, this is why I chose you. And he gives him the bracelet we see later. I guess that's really the only reason this scene like needed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was weird too, because remember watching the first time, like, whoa, where'd this Kryptonian bracelet come from?
Yeah.
But
now we know.
This is when he got it. And it's an easily deleted scene. You don't miss anything from it. So I can see why they took it out. But that would have happened here because the next couple scenes we have Clark and Lionel at the Kent farm. And again, people, have they just been waiting around all day?
Yeah, Lionel's like, he literally says, I came here to find you. It's just like, no, you came here to talk to Martha in your black suaveness. That's what you did.
Early in the morning, that was, too.
That was hours ago.
Yeah. Clark was probably still at home.
I don't. Yeah, because he's like, oh, I thought you'd be gone, Martha, when he shows up earlier. So he came to talk to Clark. Finally, I don't know how many... Clark has gone to the Daily Planet, to the Fortress of Solitude, back to the Daily Planet, right? And I know he's super fast, but still, going to the cave as well.
I was just about to say, earlier we were talking about the distance between Smallville and Metropolis. So Clark can do all those things. I mean, for Lionel to drive to Metropolis and drive back, that's, 6 hours right there? So, I mean, he guess he could have done it because I think it was a little darker. I think it was a... early evening the setting was. I'm not 100% sure.
He has a helicopter sometimes too.
He does.
So, you know,
oh, that too.
There you go.
No, he did give it to he gave Martha the jet, not the helicopter.
Right. So he still got the copter, right? But yeah, Lionel finally gets to talk to Clark here, and it's funny, like Clark is in his loft and he has the knife. And Lionel's like, oh, did Jor-El give you that? And Clark's like, oh, did you know Jor-El gave me that? It's like this is Kryptonian on it. He gives him another note because Lionel has been scribbling this Kryptonian, right? And it says, destroy the vessel. Right? That what it says? Something like that.
Something like that.
Sacrifice the vessel.
Sacrifice the vessel. Mm-hmm. Right? There it is. Clark's like, I don't know. I don't want to kill anybody. Lionel's like, hey, sometimes you got to, for the greater good, you have to make a sacrifice, right? He's talking about to kill this guy. So clearly, I think Zack Snyder watched this episode before he made Man of Steel because it's like, yeah, I got to snap Zod's neck, right? I mean, what's the problem?
It's the only episode
it's the
he
only
watched.
Way to save the world. So anyway. Lionel's talking him up, and he's like, oh, you have to make the hard choices, and it gives him his Aunt May speech from Spider-Man 2, mm-hmm. I believe there's a hero in all of us, or whatever. And so by the time, Clark finally sort of comes around to what Lionel's telling him, he's like, well, what if that means the person I have to kill is your son? And Lionel's like, oh.
Oh, that's a little different.
I regret everything I just told you. Forget that. Don't kill anyone. So I don't know.
For me, the whole thing was just like, every time he spoke, I'm like, what is he getting at? I just couldn't trust him. I don't like Lionel as being that close to Clark. It made no sense. It made no sense to me. And I was just looking for the ulterior motive. And I'm like, okay, what's the game if he wants Clark to kill his own son? All right, yeah, he'll kill Zod too. But it was just mental gymnastics for me at that point.
Well, there was one moment where Clark tells him, like, well, you can't help me. And Lionel puts his hands on his shoulders, like, oh, don't underestimate me, son. I was like, that, don't call him that.
Yeah.
Touch
yeah,
me.
Right, yeah.
That is way too much of a Jonathan thing. Yeah, he told you not to call him that.
He's rubbing on his shoulders, too. It's like, yeah, it's weird.
That's an invasion. Just, yeah. Vinyl just invades your personal space.
For
that's,
sure.
It's like,
for sure.
That's like he,
that was definitely creepy.
It's a Jonathan from Beyond the Grave, man. He's like, I'm gonna take your girl and your son.
Uh-huh. Mr. Steal your family.
So with this information, Clark tells Lionel that Lex got abducted in this field.
Yeah. Myers Field.
Myers Field, you say? Like that's
like we're supposed to know what that means.
Apparently that's right? A reference to someone who's worked on the show. It's okay. Like one of those like, you know, production, you know, name drops. So good on them, right?
Cool.
Get your name. I would do it if sure. I was working on the show. Mm-hmm. Zach Moore High School or something. That's what I call it.
Of course you would.
So Lytle goes out to this field and Lex has been returned. Mm-hmm. And he's in this fetal position as, you know, people that go through kryptonium stuff are. Still has all his clothes,
yep.
Which is weird. Especially if you think about the deleted scene, because he was naked under that blue bag.
Sure
I really need to get his deleted
scene. I don't know. I guess that's another reason to take it out, because someone was like, wait, he can't put his clothes back on? It's weird. But he wakes up, and Lionel, like, he's not very sensitive with Lex there. He's like, you made a deal with the devil, he's going to collect. Like, he's like...
Yeah, even Lex, he says, like, are you here to lecture me? You're going to help me. You came all the way out here to give me a lecture? Come on now.
Like, yeah, Lex, like, it's too late for both. Like,
did you not see the cops over here, Dad? Like,
even after abduction, Lionel is still a dick to his own son. Like, what the f***?
It was in his own best interest, okay? He was just trying to help.
Well, hey, like, it didn't work out for Lionel because Lex rocks him into that,
like
into that car, and Lionel should be dead.
Yeah, Lionel should be dead. You know, was it the Amazing Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
The guy that runs Jurassic World.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Same thing happens to him. I'm pretty sure he dies, right? But he's just like flat-faced against the windshield of the car. I'm like, oh, Lionel, like,
they didn't,
kill
they didn't even, yeah. They didn't even after make it seem like, oh, this is potentially life-threatening. He just rolled over and just looked at Lex like, bro.
Uh-huh.
It's like, Lex, what do they do to you, right? It's funny to see Lex. This is the first time he's had superpowers. So he like super speeds up. He's like, Dad, you okay? It's just funny to see him with the super speed. Like, and so Lionel is, I guess he, you know, finds his way to the hospital. We'll get there in a minute.
Yep.
But Lex super speeds off to the mansion and sees Lana there, like going through all the UFO stuff.
Yeah.
Try and figure stuff out. But he super speeds in and she's like, Lex, I thought I'd never see you again. And so what he proceeds to do to prove to Lana, to show Lana that he's different, because at the end of Oracle, like he was invulnerable or he had healing factor, like he cut his thumb and it got healed immediately, right? So I guess that was like stage one. Stage two is whatever Brainiac did to him on the ship, and now he's like full Kryptonian powers, except for flight, I guess, because I don't know. It's always funny when people get the powers and they don't fly, because Clark, it's like a mental block for him, but everyone else should be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But Lex takes a gun out and shoots himself in the head.
Yeah.
Like, there's like 100 ways you could prove to someone, do you have superpowers? That's a rather risky one. I don't know. What did you all think?
You know what's really interesting? When I rewatched that, I thought of an interview that Josh Brolin, sorry to go Marvel on you guys, but Josh Brolin, who plays Thanos in the Avengers movies, he said, people were, I think he was on like Colbert or something, and they go, what do you think of people who say like Thanos is right, that he's solving a major issue? And Josh Brolin's like, well, he is solving a major issue, but the way he's going about solving it shows how twisted he is, because he's going about it in a kind of ruthless way, completely heartless. And and to your point, like the same can be said about Lex. He could show Lana 1,000 different ways that he has powers. Instead, he chooses the most sort of ruthless, kind of violent way, which is kind of indicative of, like, at this point, his sort of character already sort of embracing the darker side of his personality.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I agree. Also, it was also kind of weird just because, like, well, nothing in the show made it seem like he knew he was invulnerable.
Yeah!
He knew he was strong, he suppressed Lionel.
That's a good point.
Then he knew he could run fast because he ran up to him like, Dad, are you okay? Which, you know, both of those are like, you know, emotional reaction, getting somebody off of you and running to check him out.
Yeah.
But like, how do you know you're invulnerable? You just
bulletproof.
Yeah.
It's like let's start at a lower level and work our way up, right? You know, like Shazam, right? Like they didn't test the bulletproof thing until he gets shot by a guy robbing a convenience store.
Yep.
It's like, you're bulletproof, that's awesome, right? Like that's not what you do in your superhero tests. Like, let me shoot myself and see if I survive. But anyway, I'm convinced they used the same little gun prop that they had from Red when Clark shot himself in the hand, and Lionel picked up the bullets. I'm sure they had those in storage somewhere and used them. But anyway, he proves to Lana. She seems really freaked out at first, and I was like, "See, Clark
her reactions were very interesting.
Clark was right not to tell her a secret because she's really freaked out." But then he drops the L bomb on her. What does he say? Like, I will always love you, or something along those lines.
And he's like, if you want to prove it to me, he's like, you know, meet me at the top of Luther Court Plaza. It's like, you didn't give me a time,
like,
though.
Like, tonight? What is tonight?
I thought
he said tonight.
I think he just said tonight.
Question: Do you guys think that Lana sort of warmed up to Lex after he showed her power because he said love? Because he said he loved her? Because I thought it was because he was showing her his quote unquote secret.
Honest
yeah, that's
her?
What I thought. That's what I was like. Oh, it's an interesting sort of like what if scenario. Like, let's see how she would have been like if she knew that her boyfriend was or had alien powers. How would she handle it? She handled it interestingly, not terribly. She didn't run away.
Well, see, Clark did it much better. He teleported her to an ice palace, crushed a piece of coal, and gave her a diamond. I mean, that's a way better way to show your girlfriend that you have superpowers than shooting yourself. But yes, to your point, that's been the big difference between Clark's relationship with her and Lex's relationship with her. But Lex really has less to lose when he's honest with her because this is all new to him as well. Plus, he's not being 100%. Lex always has some secrets, right? Even though he tells you the whole truth. But she did take it pretty well. You're right. To her credit. So then we have a hospital visit plus one because Lionel is at the hospital getting worked up, and he brings Clark up to speed on that Lex has all his powers, and tells him that he's gonna have to kill him, right? Because he's like, Clark, he tells him that, you know, he tells Clark that Lex wasn't raised like him, like Lionel raised him to be ruthless and survive at all costs. And I think that was very interesting because Lionel's not evil anymore, right? He has a different perspective, and he seems to somehow regret that. Clark's like, oh, maybe that's what'll keep him alive, right? That he'll have that fight in him. And Lionel's like, you just see that because you want to, right? So I like this for all the awkward father son moments between Lionel and Clark.
This was a good one. I appreciated this interaction. And I think it was also kind of needed.
It was a good one. It was also weird at the same time because it's more like, or to me, I see it like, this is the son I want. Go kill the son I have, please. You can now be my, quote unquote son.
Yeah, lots of awkward family dynamics going on here. And they continue.
Do we have to talk about the jet scenes? Like, the jet scenes for me are like so boring and useless.
It really served
no purpose.
There's an interesting moment in one of them.
There is something really funny because they show up on the jet scene, right? And they show up on the jet, Martha and Lois, and Lois is like, so
trying to get that.
Right, yeah.
Right? And like keeps like egging on Martha, and Martha's like, I'm not interested in a relationship with Lionel or anyone. And Lois is like, oh, okay. That's when I would have fired Lois.
Yes.
It's none of your damn business, and I appreciate it if you stay out of my personal affairs.
Yeah, because she was even like, he's like, are you just saying that just so like because you don't know how to explain it to Clark? And then Martha then Martha looks at her and is like, you're fired. because that's what I would have said to her.
I would have let her let her up to that point when she keeps pushing it, let it go, Lois. But there is, like a bottle of wine there. It says Martha on it. It has a cute note, I guess, from Lionel. I thought, because rewatching it, and I don't remember it exactly, I know they ended up being passed out in the jet later. I was like, oh, well, clearly Brainiac put this here and it's drug and they're going to pass out. No, that was
only Lois who was passed out because Martha was doing work and she lost track of time because she's a good senator, guys.
That's right. So that passed her out. To a certain point,
Lois is a lightweight, so she was just talking up like her skills earlier.
It's a lightweight, but class of light. That's right, because later on, Lois oversleeps and Martha's so caught up in her work. But then they do the double pass out because they lose air pressure.
Yeah.
Right. By the way, if you look, I don't know if it was really James Marsters. Maybe it was a stunt double. But if you look by who goes into the cockpit, it looks like it could be James Marsters. So good attention to detail there in that scene. But yes, you're right. These scenes are pointless. Lois and Martha's entire plot line in this episode is pointless. It just gives them something to do, but it is amusing. It is amusing because of like the whole, hey, you and Lionel. Huh?
Uh-huh. I'll give you that. Yeah.
So we get back to the A plot, and Clark, as he always does, he busts into Luther Mansion. He's like, Lex. He goes in both doors. He sees Lana, who's dressed again in her evil red.
Uh huh.
In a very, I don't know, just like Clark, like, oh, you're all dressed up. So, yeah, she finally left the Daily Planet. She tells Clark, I heard you talking to Chloe that you could kill Lex. It's just like, it's like, all right, now's not the time for this, right? But she drops some hard words on him, right? Yeah. She's like, I don't think you ever love me at all or something. Like, man, so this is a tough conversation between Clark and Lana, but I mean, they got to have them have a scene here, right? Because it's a season finale. Yeah. They have to have a scene. I think it would have been fine if they just didn't have a scene together. Because
that's true.
Clark is having a hard enough day, too. He doesn't need the love of his life telling her that, like, you never love me, Lex, trust me, you don't, all this stuff. How did you know he was going to be different? I should have known, right?
He told me his secret.
Yes, exactly. So rubbing that in.
He's like, if you ever really cared for me, you tell me what's going on with Lex.
Yeah, and he's like, Lana, now's not the time. But it's even worse because she leaves and then Clark's like, he's looking all sad, and then immediately Brainiac pops up right behind him. He's like, this is the worst day.
What follows in that scene with Clark and Brainiac just like makes me so mad. It's just like Brainiac's literally telling you what you're going to do, but it's like, you can be the vessel. It doesn't have to be Lex, it can be you. And then Clark's like, no, I'll never do it. And he just stands there. He stands there and just lets Brainiac infect the entire internet. I'm just like, push him against something. Like, beat him up. You know, come on, man.
Well, he tried.
He did get that one really good punch in at the start.
He did.
But you're right. He just kind of watches it. I mean, I guess he didn't know what he was going to do.
That's
but
also true.
He doesn't take action at this point. No, he doesn't. I do like how they mentioned that the original plan, because obviously in the show they didn't know back in episode 8 when they did Solitude, they didn't know this. But here they say, oh yeah, well, you were supposed to be the vessel, but you know that things went down at the fortress, so that didn't happen. And that makes a lot more sense that Brainiac would have had Clark be the vessel for Zod because he's already Kryptonian when he had to go through all these procedures. Although, you know how many people get Clark's powers all the time on this show? Nobody has to go through some kind of process, right? So I don't know why they did that. And talk to our point about people being possessed earlier, the show got me, I got the show back. Because you know what happens then? A spirit just goes up to somebody and possesses them, they have powers. They don't have to be like prepared and injected with some kind of serum by Brainiac. But anyway, Brainiac does offer Clark, like, hey, do this. We can save all this chaos and strife and whatnot. Clark's like, I'll never do what you want. And Brainiac's like, okay. And then he releases this Y2K on steroids virus.
Y2K on acid.
On acid, basically, excuse me. Yeah. As Chloe refers to it later. And we see, for some reason, the Daily Planet globe is silver in this CGI shot. Maybe they didn't quite finish the special effect. But we see all the lights slowly go out in Metropolis.
And then we have a massive blackout, and then the next thing that we cut to is the Daily Planet, and in the midst of all this chaos, and this is where Chloe sees, like, she shows Clark the laptop of, like, the Matrix.
The Matrix code, yeah.
It's a good way to describe it. It literally just looked like the Matrix.
Yeah, so you know, they get cut up on what's going on, right? A random SUV crashes through the basement of the Daily Planet. This is a good special effect, though. This was a good save. That was a practical
was
car for the most
awesome.
Part. I really like
it. Hell yeah. I remember. Okay, so fun fact for me anyway. When I rewatched the whole season, I was like, you know what? Let me see if I can count every life that Clark saves. Meaning the qualifying factor is, like, if Clark wasn't there, that person would die. And in this episode, the only person whose life he saved, who he would have been responsible for if they died, was Chloe in that scene. And it was a really good effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm also glad you guys mentioned that it was the basement, because I didn't know. I always thought that was, like, you know, like, third, fourth, fifth floor. And I'm like, how did a car get up to the fifth floor of the Daily
Flew
Planet?
Off the freeway.
It's like, what? How's that? Yeah. But the basement makes a lot more sense, yeah.
And then Clark's like, all right, well, I'm going to go kill Lex. And then he runs off, and this is, like, my favorite moment of the show. I talked this up. I don't know if you guys know. So I was a huge Clark shipper back in the day.
Yeah. Right?
Also a huge Clois theory person, thinking that Chloe would be Lois Lane. So this moment here, I thought this whole
season.
Wait,
what did you say? You were a huge Clark shipper? What does that mean, Clark shipper?
Chloe and Clark.
Okay. I was like, Clark is just Clark.
What's her name?
Oh, there's an H in there. You're right. It's
okay.
Yeah, the way it was spelled on the internet.
Chlark.
Yeah. Chlark. Yeah, it should be like Clark or something.
Yeah.
Clark.
So, you know, so season 5 here, right? Like, it started out that we had, you know, Lex was on the outside and Chloe was on the outside and Clark and Lana were together. And as the season progressed, Like Clark and Chloe went over to one side, and Lex and Lana went over to the other side. That was like your four leads of the show. I know that the three leads, you know, were Clark, Lex, and Lana, but Chloe really became part of that, you know, the Fab Four of the show, right? As the series progressed. So, you know, you get to the end here, and there's so much. I mean, the whole Chloe being Lois Lane thing, they still could have pulled it off even with the Lois Lane they had here. This is the height of me being like, man, I really don't like Lois on this show because she's ineffective. She's not doing, she's not the character she should be. And I said many times on the podcast, where people get mad at me, I love Lois in season 8. Let her be Lois. Let it be said. Erica Durance is great. But they didn't let her be Lois for so long to give her these silly jobs like, oh, you're going to work at the Talon, and you're going to be the campaign manager, and you're going to be, you know, like Lois even mentions it in this episode, her jobs, right? And they play up the whole, like, you know, Clark and her, like, brother-sister vibe so much. And I don't know, I was not feeling that vibe, but the Chloe vibe totally was, because in my head, I picture a young Lois Lane, it's Chloe. Right? I mean, that's her path on the show. So at the time, right, there's this huge section of the fandom who, like, they wanted Chloe and Clark to be together. They wanted Chloe to be Lois Lane. I was all about that. And I think it still could have worked, right? Lois could have died. Maybe she uses her name as a pseudonym. Like, there's so many ways to see have done it. It all worked out, right? It all worked out. But at the time, in 2006, this was the best thing I'd ever seen on the show. I was so amazed. Because it came out of nowhere.
It did.
I'm like, what? I don't even know why this happened, right? And it still doesn't make any sense in retrospect, right? Because he's going to run off. She's like, Clark, wait, what if I never see you again? And this is the one of the most passionate kisses I've seen on this show.
Between friends.
Yeah, I know, right?
I have commented on this show about the way they show people kissing. Like, Clark and Lana, they're eating each other's faces. It's weird.
Yeah.
I learned to kiss by watching the show, and it was not a fun experience for me. All right, I got a lot of bad feedback because of this. But anyway, the point is, if I had to base my kisses off this, I would have been a lot more popular when I was younger, because this is an epic romantic kiss between Clark and Cole. She hugs him, he hugs her back.
Oh, yeah.
It was very cinematic.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great.
This is an amazing moment. And, like, But what are we to think as audience members? Because where did this come from? Where is it going?
Where
is
it going?
No, I agree.
That's the best question, because it didn't go anywhere.
Unfortunately,
I think they mentioned it once.
They mentioned it in the pilot because for the next season, because they have to. They have to address it.
So, you know, we have that moment there. No.
Also, another thing that makes the moment great is that, like, Clark was into it. Like, you could tell. Like, it's just like, oh. Because they kind of stay, because, like, after they kiss, they kind of, like, you know, linger on them just a little bit.
She's holding his face a little bit.
Yeah, like, they're still like, you know, like, engaged in each other's face. So it's like, oh, okay.
So that was epic. And very on brand for Clark, like, a phone rings, and he's like, well, I better go get that. Like, uh-huh. How do you know that's for you? So in Smallville, the official companion season 5 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, Al Goff had a couple quotes about this, shedding some light on it. It was one of those things where, if the world's going to end, what's she going to do? I think she'd kiss him. It certainly had the desired effect, because people talked about it all summer.
And every summer since.
And that's why you did that? Like, anyway, I loved it at the time. I'm like, whoa, maybe they really are going to make Chloe Lois Lane, right? I mean, what do you do? This is the fifth season. This is, like, high stakes. The world's ending. He's going to go fight Zod. He just had this passionate kiss with Chloe. Yeah. Meanwhile, Lana's, like, all in with Lex on the dark side. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, well, she's going to be with Lex, and Chloe will be with Clark, and then they'll figure out what to do with Lois here, because, you know, the movies won't let her be Lois for whatever reason, right? But the problem was, they had Chloe already be Lois Lane on the show, and that was the impasse there. But anyway, at the time, this was, like, the best thing ever for me.
Yeah, it was definitely cool.
But we get a phone call at a phone booth, right? Another so much Superman iconography going on here, right? And it's Lex. He's like, hi, Clark.
Yes.
I heard you want to see me, or he says something.
Yep.
It's great. It's such, like, action movie villain calling the hero. It's a great moment there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how he knew he'd be at the Daily Planet. Whatever. It's cool. I'm not going to question it. So so we go from there back to the jet scenes that you guys don't want to talk about. And I agree. There's nothing here. It's it's filling time.
It just ends with Lois trying to get the emergency mask, and it just doesn't work.
Well, the problem is, like they had to have, like, the Martha and Lois are two main characters. You have to do something with them, right? Yeah. But it would have felt weird if they were like, oh, well, they're off in Washington this week, and that's it. Because it's a season finale. Yeah. You need stakes. But these are empty stakes, because you know they're not going to, like, the plane going to crash, and they're going to, right? What was the point of this? Because as we see, right, as you guys pointed out, I missed it, but, like, you know, the wine or whatever she was drinking was drugged, but Martha was busy working, wasn't drugged. So Lois eventually wakes up and realizes they're way after their schedule. Mm-hmm. They're out in the middle of the Arctic somewhere. And Brainiac is the pilot. They can't get in the door, right? But I don't get what was his plan? Like, why did he, if he was going to kill him, why didn't he just kill him? Why is he going to fly them off to the fortress, which is where they end up, spoilers, in season 6? I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
You know my thoughts.
Yeah, it definitely felt very filler. Like, they're just trying to fill time for the entire episode. Like, we got a max 40 minutes out. And you're right, we do have to do something with these characters. It's a season finale. They did the best they could because they, from the beginning of the episode until the end, they're talking about going to Washington, D.C. So it's not like you said, it's not like they went to Washington, all this stuff is happening. You get to see their progress from going from the farm to Washington. I'm just glad that it didn't take up too much of the episode, because if that was the case, then I would just spoil the whole season finale.
Yeah.
I have to admire Brainiac's in-characterness, because he's actually in a pilot uniform and he's flying the plane. Yeah. And as established before, Brainiac has multiple copies, so that's where he is.
Very Agent Smith of him.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, Matrix. So we get back to the Kent farm, and I guess Lex told Clark to meet me at your house or something. It's really cool. Everything's all dark, you know, it's all this dark blue visuals. And Lex does this thing that I noticed that Rosamund always does with his arms, just his forearms. He raises them up. He's like, "Hey, Clark, so what'd you decide? You gonna kill me?" And he throws his forearms up like that. Keep an eye out for it. It's a Rosenbaumism he does throughout his acting as Lex. But this is a great scene between Clark and Lex. Again, this is the halfway point of the show, right? Yeah. At the time, we all thought this is going to be the end. I mean, by the time season 5 was over, we knew it wasn't the end, but we thought we were approaching the end. So to have this confrontation between Clark and Lex like this, because Lex is, you know, he's just putting it all out there. He's like, "I wanted your life. I wanted your family. I wanted your loyal girlfriend." you know, like, damn.
And he's like, "Well, I did manage to get one of those things."
Yeah, Lex is just deep cuts against Clark there.
Clark, and I think Clark's only retort in some of this was just, "You're not yourself."
Yes. So. We have a plus one for "You're not yourself." It's great. We have a great scene between the two of them. You know, it reminds me of the scene of them in the series finale. Like, it's just like finally these two guys are, they know each other's secrets and they're being honest with each other. And I thought this was a great scene.
And season 7 almost.
Yeah, well, this is better than the scene in season 7. The scene in Arctic is disappointing, especially knowing going into it, that was going to be the last scene between Clark and Lex. I was like, we've done this before much better here, for example. So I thought this was
great. I thought that the better scene between the two of them was, I believe, and I can't remember, it was either season 3 or 4, where Lex had the ring, and he was like, "I was always the villain of the story."
Oh, yeah, when he's evil Lex in Onyx, right?
Right. I thought that was, like, a really cool, like, "Oh, there's no going back from this" kind of moment. But to your point, this is also a very, very powerful scene, because I thought the acting from Michael Rosenbaum was incredible, because you can literally see Lex and then you can literally see Zod when he goes from one character to the other. He just changes up his face, the way he's standing, the way he's talking. It was superb. I loved it.
I got to rewatch the last scene from season 7. I actually did not, going into it, I did not know that Rosenbaum was leaving the show.
Yeah.
So when he didn't come back for season 8, I was like, so it was Lex. And then again, also, that was also at the time where I wasn't necessarily following, like, the actors outside of the show. This is before social media. So I only know them on this screen, or in Rosenbaum's case, from Sorority Boys as well. So
Sorority Boys.
Right?
Sweet November. Can't forget Sweet November.
This is a great scene here, because, you know, they start grappling a little bit. It's not a huge super power throwdown, but again, 2006, this was great, right? I mean, to see Clark Kent and Lex Luthor have this battle, right? And Brainiac shows up right when Clark pulls out the knife and he's like holding it against Lex's throat. Brainiac's egging him on. So Clark, and what does he decide to do? He decides to throw the knife into Brainiac, which seems to me, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, because I think the episode does a very bad job explaining this. I think that was Brainiac's plan all along.
Yes.
He's like, "Well, Clark's not going to kill his best friend, so he'll try to kill me, and that'll give me access to the fortress," because you see the fortress light up red. So it's like Brainiac now has access to the fortress because Clark's asked what's happened. Yeah. And I don't know why we used to quote this.
We did.
It's such a dumb line, but it's like, "You've opened the portal for Zod."
We used to quote this all the
because
time.
Because it's like he's just screaming it up to the air. It just seems so weird. Yeah. I don't know why. It's one of those lines. So that was my interpretation of what was going on, because you see, like, the red Zod symbol going around. And so I guess this Brainiac thinking is through. This is what he always wanted.
Yeah, because, like, earlier, like, when they were in the mansion, like, he mentions, you know, Clark's biggest weakness, and that was and it was his affinity for humans. And so I think he took that into account, that he didn't want to kill anybody, even if it was Lex. And so I think he factored that and calculated that into his plan.
Yeah. So we have a plus one for possession count And a plus one for not the last one of Krypton, because Lex is possessed by Zod, and Zod is here. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. Brainiac disappears, again, because James Marsters wanted too much money, I guess, so he's got written out of the show. I don't know. There's talk, there was talk about that behind the scenes this season. I think, you know, honestly, I think that was another reason they didn't make him Zod.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Pay him more, you know, so I don't know. There's a lot of behind the scenes rumors about, like, well, because, you know, he's in, like, the first batch of episodes, and then he's gone. He's in one random episode in the middle, and he comes back for the two-part season finale. So I think that was what was going on there. But anyway, so he's gone. We don't see him at all. We hear his, well, we see him in season 7, actually. Mm-hmm. And then we hear him in season 8.
And then we see him in 10.
Yeah, and that's it. So for James Marsters. So yeah, people think, oh yeah, James Marsters. He, like, he's, what's he, like in 10 episodes, maybe?
Maybe.
Out of 217, 218. Yeah. But he left a real big impression. And I think being like, you know, the CW guy, the WB guy coming from, you know, Buffy and Angel, I think that was another reason people think of him the way they do as such a big guest star.
Oh yeah, definitely.
This happens, and to your point, you see Rosenbaum, you know, really make an attempt to be like, I am someone else. Mm-hmm. So, did you guys pick up on this? They gave him the telekinetic powers the Kryptonians had in Superman 2, because he, like, uses his hand, and Clark has to look at him, and then he, like, nods his head, and then he gets blows him out of the...
I thought he threw it really fast. I just thought he always threw it really fast, and we were watching it in slow motion.
It's confusing. Like, this episode is pretty well directed, but this was confusing to me, and I think they gave him these telekinetic powers.
I mean, I remember just thinking it was, like, really cool and, like, chilling the way he just looked at him, and he just went like that. He just not even nodded. Like, he just went like that, and then Clark's gone. I was like, whoa, that was cool.
Well, it could have been that. It could have been that, or the bracelet sucked him in. I don't know, right? Because he pulls off the bracelet, he throws it. These are the same bracelets from that deleted scene as well, but the same bracelet we saw in the season premiere. When Discount Ursa and Nan come in and try to throw Clark into the Phantom Zone as well, so there's some good continuity there. But yeah, so now Zod is officially Lex, and he's going to take over the world. So way to go, Clark! Fail. So, oh yeah, we already talked about Martha and Lois. They failed to get the oxygen mask down in time, so they passed out in the Arctic somewhere. I guess that Brainiac disappeared too.
I guess
he was piloting the plane. I don't know. We'll find out in season 6. But then, you know, we live in tumultuous times right now, my friends. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have an escape like Smallville where you can turn on the TV and not see riots in the streets and police squads. And oh, no, we're in an episode where there's a freaking riot across the earth. Yep. Like, I did not need to see this right now, guys. Yep. Come on.
We're including, like, some stock footage of Los Angeles, like, likely from, like, the early 90s. Yeah. And then, like, some New York footage of, like, probably, like, in the mid to late 90s after, like, a Yankees World Series win. Like, it's like, what are we doing here, guys?
And it is interesting that, you know, they caption, like, Los Angeles, New York. That footage clearly looks like stock footage, does not match anything else in the episode of when the riots are in Metropolis. But, yeah, we see, you know, I'm just going to say it. We see people blowing up police cars. We see riot squads. I'm like, oh, man, flashbacks to today. How little did I know? And of course, last week's episode, you know, Lex thought Brainiac was making a virus that was going to wipe out humanity. So, Smallville, ahead of its time, I guess, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100% ahead of its time.
More ways than one, yes.
But, you know, the scenes like this, you know, as we, you know, kind of jokingly talk about this in connection to current affairs, clearly they're serious things. But when there's scenes like this, that it always is really unsettling, like, when, like, because this is what people would do, right? I mean, Brainiac says it earlier. He's like, you take away their technology, they're going to revert to the animals they are. And this is the people are just writing and doing kind of, and that's great because you put yourself in the situation. You just think about what might happen and if you get caught up in the situation. So you see, you know, Chloe, who's left the Daily Planet, and she's just getting caught up in this whole mob of people. And it's I think it's pretty effective.
I was really impressed because that particular scene with the, I guess, the chaos that's going on in Metropolis made me really wonder, like, how much of a budget they had, because it looked really impressive. It looked like a kind of, like, for TV at that time. Well, I don't recall ever seeing, like, a scene like that where there was, like, the car crashing through the Daily Planet, and then in the same episode there are all these extras beating up the cars, and there's chaos in the streets, and there's a green screen. I mean, you could judge the quality of the green screen, but, like, Lex on the roof. It just seemed like very high budget, high quality stuff that you'd expect from, like, a TV show nowadays.
Yeah, you had it right earlier. They saved all the budget for the season finale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and then Chloe's out there. She sees Lionel's limo.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe he had, like, I guess I misremember this. I'm like, maybe he came to get her, but no, he just happened to run into him. Uh-huh. But she's like, yeah. So he has her get in, and you think, oh, good, Chloe's safe for a second. But no, then the mob breaks in, you know, to Lionel's limo, pulls both of them out. You know, we leave them both in really, like, what's
bad shape,
them,
yeah.
Right? Like, that, those are stakes, right? You know, for the season finale. Like, Lois and Martha on an airplane, I don't know. It didn't connect with me. But, you know, Lionel and Chloe caught up in a mob riot in Metropolis. Oh, God, what's going to happen to them, right? Don't forget about Lana. She's got a date with her boyfriend on the roof of the Luthor Plaza.
And that is the most important thing.
She's not going to miss it.
Yeah, she is determined.
She is kung-fuing people her way to get to the Luthor Plaza. Lance and I watched it before. You know, when we record these together, we try and watch them before we do the podcast. And we were joking that, like, Lana just runs by, sees Chloe being mobbed, but just keeps on running.
Very Jon Snow of her.
So, do you guys think that Zod had access to Lex's memories here? Like, did he know?
I think...
Lana was when she shows up, because he looks at her like, who is this woman? What is she telling me? Like, that's the vibe I got from Rosamund's performance. I think he didn't know either, so he kind of played it both ways. Maybe they hadn't decided yet, but that's the vibe I got when Lana goes up to the roof. It's like, I made up my mind. I want to be together. What a very romantic
Yeah, I mean, like, I remember in the next episode, I think Lex actually tells Lana, before I consumed his form, he had feelings for you, and getting rid of that was I got rid of that because it left a bad taste in my mouth or something like that. So he's some
kind of impression of who Lex
cared for. So he definitely knew, but it was a bit weird. Yeah.
So what was a better kiss, Lex and Lana here on the roof, guys, or Chloe and Clark?
Chloe and Clark.
100%. Chloe and Clark.
Yeah. You guys can stay.
I'm a little biased. I never shipped Lex and Lana.
I don't think anyone did.
Nobody.
Right? Did.
Okay.
That's because another name you can't even put together. How did you do that?
Lexana, bro. Yeah.
Never mind.
I got them all up here, man.
I was very
man.
Hopeful. Even though I knew how the story would end, turn out, I was always... You know, when I watch it, and I guess this is a testament to how good of a show it is, I'm always like, come on, Lex, you could do it. You know, you got it in you. But it never happened, unfortunately, because what I really love about the show is that it really asks the question, like, what would have happened to Lex if he did have either a good father or a good friend support network, or if he just didn't, like, give in to his own fear about other people. So, I mean, I don't know. I always watch it, and I always hope for the best, knowing the worst is coming for him. But yeah,
that is an interesting take on the show, just because, like, when you're getting into these shows about superheroes, as a comic book fan, you kind of know, especially if you're talking about the origin story, you already know certain things that are going to happen. Like, take Smallville, for example, Clark and Lex are friends, but you know they're eventually going to end up to be enemies. So it's really interesting to see, like, how that comes to pass, and, like, how this, and like you said, the alternatives, what would happen if Lex had a better upbringing, or if he had better friends or a better support system around him? Would he be more philanthropic versus, like, psychotic, you know, stuff like that?
Well, I follow on what Clark said on this episode. You did this to yourself.
You think so? I'm in the camp that says that Lex had Clark been a better friend, Lex might not have been a bad guy, because, like, in the beginning...
No, I agree with you. I say that in jest, because I thought it was a pretty cold-hearted thing for Clark to tell him. Like, as opposed to the series finale, where he says, "I'm sorry I couldn't save you, Lex." That's more Superman.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was like, that got me. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's five more years of learning about how to be Superman. I get it. Right. You know, Clark's in a dark place right now. But I think that's one of the great conversation points of Smallville. Like, what if Jonathan was nice to Lex?
Right.
What if Clark was nice to Lex?
Yeah.
What if people were just more honest with each other? Right?
You do kind of get that question answered, because Lana was nice to Lex. Lana married Lex, and look what happened there.
True.
You see, you give people what they want, they turn back into assholes. All right, so you got to keep them wanting. Yeah. All right, that's the key. So, life lessons from Smallville, everyone.
Yeah, right.
So I know you guys are talking about the green screen there. I thought the final shot, though, of the episode was really good. We have the Lex and Lana kiss, and we pan out, we see the chaos, and we keep panning out, and then the Earth. You know, and it's not stock footage. It's not from Terminator 3. I'm very impressed. So we keep zooming out, and the lights are going out. The lights go out.
When the lights go out.
And we keep panning out from the Earth, and we see, like, this virus is spreading, and, you know, the electronic virus is spreading, and the lights are going out. And we see the Phantom Zone, right? We haven't really seen that. We saw it briefly in the season premiere when we got Discount, Not an Ursa in the Phantom Zone there. Mm-hmm. But now we see, I like how they have like the edges of the Phantom Zone are like different weird zoom ins.
Yeah.
We see Clark's eyes and and then we see him trapped in the Phantom Zone. And this tease works so well. They did the exact same thing with the exact same special effect for Supergirl in the season 7 season finale. So she gets into the Phantom Zone. It's the same shot.
Yeah.
They just took whatever, like Tom Welling out, and they put Laurel Vandervoort in. But this is like, wow, this is what a way to end the season, because, you know, Zod is taking over Lex. The world is in chaos. Mm-hmm. And Clark is stuck in the Phantom Zone. Like, that's a cliffhanger right there.
That is.
It was a good one. It was a good one. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because like the overall, we were talking about earlier, the overall theme of this season finale was like fail. Martha and Lois never made it to Washington. Fail. Clark did
see,
not
that
kill
subplot
anyone.
Was essential to the theme of the episode.
Yeah, see, I'm convinced.
We need those seeds.
Yeah.
Right? John Glover did not bag Martha Kent. Fail.
That is a fail.
But Chloe got to kiss Clark.
That's true.
The
ultimate win. That's the one win.
Yeah,
it was
true.
Worth all this. Yeah. It was worth all this for that one moment.
So what did you decide, Clark? Are you going to kill me?
You can't blame me for this, Lex. You did this to yourself.
Oh, come on, Clark. You love it. Ever since that day on the bridge, you've always seen yourself as my savior. The one thing that would pull me off the dark path I'd started. See, that's why you cling to the idea that there's still some good in me. You don't want to face the fact that you might have failed.
Or maybe I just can't believe that someone would have so little willpower.
It's a little hard to compete with the iron willpower it takes to kill one of your best friends. How did you know I was going to come back like this?
You don't realize how much danger you're in.
I used to think you had this strong inner core. You were so virtuous. And yet you lie. All the time. To me, to Lana, to all the people who cared about you. What kind of sick person would do that?
Vessel got a 9.1 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. So I'll ask y'all, let's go around the table here. Lance, what would you give Vessel on the letter grade scale?
An A. I probably would have given this like an A+ if you would have asked me this like, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago, however long.
Yeah, no,
right. I know, right? But or however, like when we first saw it, I would have just been like, A+ is the best episode of the show, you know, but now looking upon it with being a little bit more objective, like you see some of the like some of the flaws in it, but like it's still a really, really good episode, in my opinion. The Clark and Chloe kiss kind of elevates it because it's like it's a really pivotal and like highlight moment of not only the episode or the season, but the show in general. And it's especially because it's a talking point that has lasted this entire time. The Lex and Clark stuff is really good. And like it's a good cliffhanger. It's a solid cliffhanger, especially knowing that Clark, our hero, is off in the Phantom Zone with and we have no idea how he's going to get out. Lex is now has powers and is like, you know, poised to take over the world. So it sets you up and makes you really want to be excited for what's coming in the next season. So I give it an A.
Very well said. What about you, The Rave?
Honestly, guys, season 5 wasn't my favorite, but I will say as an episode, even if you just watch it by yourself, by itself as a standalone episode, which I did to get ready for this, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. So, I mean, if I were to give it a rating, I'd say like a B-, maybe even a C if I'm feeling like a little dickish, but yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, like it didn't blow me away. There were some, again, I was impressed by the budget or how it looked like they made really good use of their budget. It looked like, again, for the time and for now, like a really, really sort of high-end episode. But yeah, I mean, like I wasn't too crazy about a lot of the plot. I mean, you know, maybe I'd give it an A if the whole Martha Lois thing wasn't there. I'm just starting to harp on that. It just bothers me.
All right. So B- for you then.
B-.
All right. All right, Super Bass, what do you got?
Yes, sir. For me, I'm going to go with B+, A-, around there. I definitely agree that as a season finale of a show, that it definitely hit the right point. It ended with a cliffhanger. It had elements of drama. It also wrapped up certain questions about the season, like what was going to happen with Lana and Lex. Are they going to be together? Are they not? It answered that question. I sort of answered the question with, Martha and Jonathan. Are they going to get together? Like, they had the conversation, Lois and Martha on the plane.
Jonathan Glover.
I'm sorry, my bad. Lionel Luther.
He's a big fan. He's a big fan, our boy.
Right? Yeah, sorry, my bad. So, yeah, we kind of got that question answered, whether they're going to get together or not, and just left other things unanswered, which is good as a season finale. I just wish, like, the entire show, have more action in it. Mm-hmm. You got super – I understand for the majority he's going against people who are, like, vastly weaker than him. So, like, for the most part, a simple knock on the forehead can knock someone out. But, like, you have mano y mano. Like, you have Clark and Lex. They can duke it out. I know it's a TV budget. Like, they can do something, you know. Like the best fight scene ever in the show, in my opinion, is the season 9 finale. That was the best.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I agree.
Best fight scene ever. And they could have done something like that. Like,
they had to take away their powers. But
Yeah, right. They had to take away the powers. But now let's just say, even if you keep their powers, they're still playing on an even playing field. So, like, a punch,
right.
You know, you could just look a little, I don't know. Anyway, I just wish there was a little bit more action in it. But it definitely, like I said, answered a lot of questions in terms of being a good season finale and wrapping up some questions from the previous season leading into the next season. So I'm going to give it, if I had to pick one of those, I'd say A-.
All right. A-, good. As for me, I'm going to give it an A. I am more aligned with Lance, where, like, if you ask me when this episode came out, it's A+, best episode I've ever seen, right? You're just going off the high of all these new things you haven't seen in the show. I agree with you, Superbase, about the action, because you compare this to something like you see today in the Arrowverse. I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of quaint. I mean, I feel like you could have done more, mm-hmm. although it's like, well, they're saving it for the season premiere. I'm like, no, this is the season finale. Yeah. You see that now. But you talk about that. I mean, you talk about disappointing season finales. I mean, what about Doomsday, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like,
oh my God.
Clark got punched 3 times, yeah. And then jumped him into a pit.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah. That's disappointment. So I think about this and I think about that. I'm like, oh, okay, let's be grateful for what we got here. but you're right. Even with they both had superpowers, Lex and Clark just threw each other 30 feet like mm-hmm. they would anyone else. That's the only difference. So yeah, I hear you there, definitely. So I think that those kind of things, and then a lot of plot contrivances around, oh, I overheard you saying this about this, that, and blah, blah, blah. So that brings it down to an A for me, but it's still one of my favorite episodes, especially to rewatch. So just to do the rundown here. A for me, A for Lance, B minus for the Rave, A minus for Super Bass. Those are your rankings for Vessel. Last order of business, the tally board. We have a +1 for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. That brings us to 39. We have a +1 for episode title set in episode. That's 40. We have a +1 for hospital visit. That's 86. 86 out of 110 episodes, for those of you keeping score at home. We have a +1 for Not the Last Son of Krypton. Brings us to 5. A +1 for possession count. That brings us to 20. Finally, we have a +1 for You're Not Yourself. As Clark tells Lex at the end. That brings us to 24. And finally, Bechdel test passed this week because Martha and Lois had several scenes.
Yes.
Some of which were about men, some of which were not.
Mm-hmm.
But Bechdel test pass for them. Alrighty, guys. Well, it's been a lot of fun.
Indeed it has.
Yeah.
Having y'all on the podcast. Why don't you tell us where we can find you, your band, and yourselves out there online?
You can find us on Spells and Curses at everywhere. Instagram, YouTube, you name it. Our music's on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube. Spells and Curses. Be our friend.
All right.
And after this podcast, after talking about it, you can find me watching the season 6 premiere of Smallville. Because I know, okay, what happened now? I got to go rewatch that now, too.
You're going to get more action, Super Bass. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, right? First 5 minutes, at least. Yeah.
That's right. All right, Lance, what about you?
They can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias.
And as for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. We talk about movies, remakes, reboots, sequels, and when franchises get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFPEarth. And finally, for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMalva with one S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, we did it.
We did it.
We're halfway there.
Halfway.
Halfway there.
Oh!
Midpoint of the series. Never thought I'd see the day.
Congrats. So,
I thought I'd finish before 10 years, but we'll see, my friends. But we got 5 more years left. So thank you for sticking with us this long. We are going to see this thing through for the next 5 seasons. And I look forward to revisiting Smallville with all of y'all. We'll be back soon with some special episodes between seasons, as we are prone to do. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold on to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Dallas Hernandez, Cavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Casey Cochran, Nathan McKenzie, Jim Thomas, James Bandini II, Tim Miller, Thomas Navin, Joe Mikindo, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Figuerella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Rachel Miller, Catherine Emmerich, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Will Hunt, Nathan Ruffcatcher, Clunk Kent, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jerry Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirsch, Anthony Anderson, Joey Dunberg, and Jasmine Magalie. Thank you so much to all these patrons. You too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.